World leaders are in Bali for the G20 summit. They have a lot on their agenda, including the global food and energy crisis and the war in Ukraine. But are they likely to find a unified solution? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahalbarra. The G20 summit is underway on the Indonesian island of Bali. Leaders from around the world are hoping to get a consensus on a wide range of issues affecting billions of people, and the post-pandemic global economy is top of their agenda. But tensions about Russia's war in Ukraine have taken center stage, with the majority of members strongly condemning the military action. Russia's foreign ministry says the summit is not the place to discuss security issues and the world's economic challenges should be prioritised. So will there be a unified action? We'll bring in our guests in a moment. First, this report from our diplomatic editor, James Bass, who is at the summit in Bali.
G20 summits take place every single year, but this is a most unusual one given the circumstances of the war in Ukraine. And it's been most difficult for the organisers, Indonesia. In fact, many months ago, I remember speaking to an Indonesian diplomat who was worrying about exactly how they were going to choreograph this summit. And that's because one of the members of the G20 is Russia, the country that invaded Ukraine. One of the things they normally have at a summit like this is known as the family photo, when all the leaders smile for the cameras. Well, that's been abandoned at this particular meeting because there's no family feeling here and no one felt like a photo. We certainly don't have all of the normal participants here. That's because President Putin decided not to attend the G20 and to send in his place Sergei Lavrov, his foreign minister. But he is cutting his visit here to the G20 short and not attending the last day of the summit. President Zelensky of Ukraine was invited by Indonesia to be a guest participant. He too has decided not to come to this summit because he says he has to be at home at a time when his country is under attack, and he hasn't left Ukraine since the start of the war. But he did address the G20 by video link, making his point that his country does not want to do another peace deal with Russia until Russia's pulled all of its forces out of Ukraine. This is James Bays in Bali for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests in Bali, Denise Rudich, director of the G20 Research Group in London. She is also a global governance expert and also advised several countries' anti-corruption policies. In Washington, Daniel Speckhard, president and CEO of Chorus International and former US ambassador to Belarus. In Moscow, Sergei Markov, director of the Institute of Political Studies and former Russian member of parliament. Welcome to the program. Denise, the G20 summit has always been a forum about financial stability and other pressing global issues. This time it's really quite different in different aspects, particularly the fact that Russia is there and Russia, its invasion of Ukraine, is dividing many countries within the G20.
Yes, so the G20 is the premier global forum to discuss issues of economic concerns and economic stability. It was kind of born out of an economic crisis. The first G20 finance ministers and central bank governors meetings was in 1999. However, in 2008 was the first time that the leaders came together from the world's largest economies to discuss issues of common concern. So the G20 makes up of about 85% of global GDP. 75% of world exports are generated by G20 countries, and you know, and they make up 2/3 of the world's population. So that said, it has sometimes there are specifically on the sidelines, there are bilateral meetings, there are trilateral meetings, etc. And then there do tend to be some kind of the side statements that tend to be issued or that may have been issued condemning different countries or addressing some of the geopolitical issues of the day.
Daniel, since 1999, the rationale has been basically if you bring together the greatest economies of the world unified when it comes to dealing with global issues, you would send a very positive signal to the entire world. But when you have countries in this particular summit pushing for isolating Russia and you have others in the same camp saying, no, we have to have Russia on board, could this be the biggest crisis facing G20?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is part of international affairs and diplomacy. These things go up and down. The G20 has a strong reason for existence in this context of getting these other voices to tables that there aren't a place for, right? We need voices like Indonesia and Brazil and Saudi Arabia and Turkey and Australia at these tables. So it's really important that this continues. At the same time, when international events like this are happening that are capturing really a global attention for good reason, right? We have a nuclear power here that has said that they haven't taken off the issue of using nuclear weapons. That's going to draw a lot of international attention on the security side, and it sometimes overwhelms these economic issues. But I don't think we have to worry about the future of the G20.
Okay, Sergey, the Russian foreign minister, Sergey Lavrov, I said this is not the place to discuss some of the security issues, particularly I think he was referring to the war in Ukraine. What is Russia's biggest concern when it comes to this summit in particular? Because you get the sense that the Russians are really concerned about the final communique.
No, Russia has no concern. Russia has been concerned about some possible terrorist attack against President Vladimir Putin. Because we know that now it could be very much realistic. And we know that United States and British intelligence service, they use terrorist attack. For example, they terrorist attack against gas pipeline and nuclear terrorism, which is conducted by Kyiv repressive regime against Zaporizhzhia atomic power station during 3 months. And, you know, this information campaign of demonization of Vladimir Putin in all Western control media globally. And it was concern. It was the main reason why Vladimir Putin decided not to go to this G20 summit. As about resolution, we was absolutely sure that now G20 is divided on the West and non-West. And the number of non-Western countries just bigger than Western countries. That's why we were sure that was no bad negative words about Russia in this resolution. Finally, the compromise was that now it's some sentence that some of the countries accused Russia and some of the countries has alternative position over this issue.
Denis,
normal. We have no so much big concern about this.
Okay,
but the split between West and non-West is the main result of this G20 summit.
Okay, Denis, China and Brazil in particular opposed to any steps to be taken against Russia. China's stance when it comes to the war in Ukraine has been widely seen as a sign of the eroding relations between the United States of America and China. What are the expectations as far as the summit are concerned against the backdrop of this political divide?
So yesterday, President Biden and President Xi Jinping had a 3-hour bilateral. So this is the first time that the U.S. and China have met in 5 years. And what was, I will say, extraordinary was the tone of the meeting. It was incredibly conciliatory. The language used was it was positive. It looked like they were creating bridges. They created a mechanism whereby, you know, before an issue escalated into a crisis, they were going to make sure that the individuals with the right level of seniority, or they've indicated that they will make sure that the individuals with the right level of seniority are involved before there is another crisis. In terms of whether there will be a final communique, or whether there will be agreement on every single, particularly geopolitical issues, there, you know, definitely might be challenging. What Indonesia has done, which is fantastic, is created a theme whereby they, you know, the summit theme for this year is, it's all about unity. It's about coming together. Mm-hmm. It's about making sure that we all recover stronger together. They picked, you know, kind of overarching topics that are of interest to every single country at the summit. Global health infrastructure and global health architecture, mm-hmm. Digital transformation, just energy transition, and sustainable energy transition. So these are all things that the countries, regardless of, you know, whether you're East, West, and at what particular level of economic development you are, we can all, you know, we would hope that we can all agree with to find common ground for the common good.
Okay, Daniel, can you help us navigate through the very complex landscape of the G20? Because this is a summit that was supposed to tackle those issues that we spoke about, which is basically the post-COVID-19 economic order, the war in Ukraine. But then you have the bilateral meetings. Biden met with Chinese Xi Jinping amid growing U.S. concern about China's growing global clout. Two separate things here. Which one is the top priority for the United States of America? War in Ukraine or China's growing role?
Well, you know, I think a country like the United States is going to have multiple top priorities, and China certainly is an equal priority to the issues going on in Eurasia. At the same time, when you start talking about insecurity related to potential nuclear weapons, as I mentioned earlier, that grabs your immediate attention. But I like what Denise was saying here. These G20 meetings are more than just the communique. They're more than just what the collective is talking about. They are about these bilaterals. They are about a lot of opportunities for world leaders to get outside their countries and to talk to other world leaders and to get a different perspective. And that's why, again, the G20 brings more of these leaders to the table, allows them to see the world in a different perspective. So for me, what's really important about this summit is these meetings between the Chinese and the Americans, which haven't happened in a long time, also between Australia and China. The opportunity to have these discussions in a bilateral context. And then these leaders go back to their countries where they're overwhelmed by their domestic issues and politics and economics, but they come back with a worldview. And while they may not be able to tackle all those issues, Denise said, in a way that brings consensus, makes us all feel warm and fuzzy, I can say that these meetings usually have an important impact on turning eyes towards international affairs in a way that is powerful over time.
Sergey, in the past, such meetings were an opportunity for Russian leaders to showcase their growing geopolitical influence. But this seemed to be more and more isolated. You said earlier Russia is not really concerned. But when you see that each time there is a gathering, you feel like that the Russian officials are struggling to try to press ahead with their own narrative, particularly when it comes to the war in Ukraine.
Of course, now Russian diplomacy in the very difficult situation. We see the huge attacking of the US-led coalition against Russia in all international organizations. Even, you know, Russian sportsmen not allowed to go to the Olympic Games. So, of course, Russian diplomacy in big trouble. But it's exactly the time for the good diplomats. How really strong Sergei Lavrov, but we could see if he is acting in a very difficult situation. The Russian goals of Russian diplomacy is absolutely clear. First of all, we want to explain everybody that it's not war between Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine is war of the United States of America and personally Joe Biden against Russia using their proxy Ukrainian army. Secondly, we want to show that Russia is ready to the peaceful compromise in any moment if Russian interests will be respected. And specifically, Ukraine will be neutral, democratic. All thousands of political prisoners in Ukraine will be liberated. Russian language, which is language of the 70% of the population of Ukraine will get official status, and all terrorist groups, including neo-Nazi groups, should be prohibited. If this will be disrespected, demands Russia, can easily go to the peaceful negotiation. Another important goal for Russian diplomacy is new direction for Russian economy, because Russia imported a lot of goods from the European Union countries. Now, because sanctions is impossible, Russia need to build much more intensive economic relations with non-Western countries. And Lavrov did it.
Okay. Denis, do you think this could be a moment when all the parties are trying to look and see whether what is happening in the Ukraine, the Chinese-American rivalry, could somehow create new political realignments within the G20? Could we see a consolidated Russian-Chinese-Brazilian axis as opposed to the axis led by the United States of America?
Oh, wow. That's a that's one very interesting question. I think one of the big challenges this year, you know, there were recent elections. So in, from a kind of political will, high-level political will, that's definitely going to be missing. I think the rhetoric that has been used, you know, again, or the rhetoric that began to be used when the war in Ukraine happened, you know, the use of words like allies and alliance of states and whatnot by the U.S., you know, we are in a times of war. So I quite say, I don't expect for the G20 to end the war without the key players at the table. You know, for that, you need international diplomacy. You need everybody around the table that has the ability to make the decisions. We don't have. We have one out of the three countries, or well, we've got two out of the three countries, or well, the four countries. Let me try it again. We have two out of the four countries that you mentioned that need to be brought to the table at the very least. And that's definitely going to be a challenge. However, there are a number of issues that are of concern to all of those countries. International trade, food security, climate change. These are things that are, you know, rising inflationary pressures, volatile markets, not just in traditional finance, but also in new finance in the crypto industry. I mean, these are all things that are affecting the population and the daily lives of individuals who live in those countries. So again, if they can come to agreement on at least those issues, I think we're definitely, you know, 50 steps forward. Will the G20 end the war in Ukraine? I am a little bit skeptical about that because, like I said, we don't have the right players around the table.
Daniel, when the reason why I'm asking you about China and the United States of America, because you look at the platform itself, the forum, the G20, now the two leaders of the US and China met. When you look at the relations between the two, under Trump, there were tariffs imposed against China. And then in 2022, the Chips and Science Act was imposed against China under the Biden administration, which basically encourages advanced technology to manufacturing to move back to the United States of America. On the other hand, the Chinese seem to be really preoccupied by what they consider as an aggressive push by the Americans when it comes to Taiwan. Is this something that could create more problems for the G20 in the future? Or this is something separate, bilateral, between just the US and China?
Well, I think these bilateral issues often bleed over into the multilateral forum. So don't be surprised if it comes up again, and it's always kind of there as a little nettle. But I do think these, again, offer an opportunity for international leaders to come together where they don't have to set up a specific bilateral meeting with all the pressures that come from a bilateral meeting in terms of being able to produce results. This gives, especially in these kind of opportunities, to kind of soften back into a diplomatic way to engage through dialogue, leaders an opportunity to tiptoe back into these relationships. And I see that's what's happening here. I see it's a very positive move for both China and the United States. And of course, if China and the United States get along, it's a positive move for the world economically and politically and from a security perspective. So I think everybody watching this should be pleased with the positive messages that are coming out, while at the same time not being, you know, naive that this relationship is just going to turn into something very warm, right?
Okay.
China has a view of its future, and the United States is a global power, and they're going to continue to compete probably on the world stage.
Sergey, right after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the supply disruption globally, along with the rising inflation, the soaring energy prices, have been widely seen as being weaponized in a way or another by Russia to further get some political gains. Is Russia in a very delicate position as we speak? Because there is a massive pressure on the Russians to, at least when it comes to the export of grains, to show that it is willing to make sure that there is a smooth supply of grains globally.
Of course, situation quite difficult about the grain. It's now a big struggle. Of course, that agricultural crisis also partly connected with blockage of the Ukrainian and Russian grain to the international market. But same time, the amount of Russian grain to the market, three or probably five times more than number of Ukrainian grain.
Mm-hmm.
And also Russian grain is those who is used by humans in the different countries. But Ukrainian grain mostly go to the animals in Europe. And so there was some pressure from all the countries to Russia, and Russia agreed to deblockade Odessa-Nikolaev port for the Ukrainian grain.
Okay.
But it was part of the grain deal, and Russian grain should go to the international market as well. It's profitable for Russia. But Western countries, as you may know, they violated almost all agreements. It's that's why we have a diplomatic crisis globally.
All right.
And Russia insisting that Western countries should follow their promises and to stop blockage of the Russian grain access to the global market.
Let's move forward, because I have a few other angles to cover with you, if you don't mind. Denis, shortly, if you don't mind. This is a moment when the world is looking forward to reopen borders, lift COVID-related restrictions, when you have the G20, which represents something like 80% of the GDP, struggling, divided. Do you have any, is there any optimism in the air that we're likely to see some string of economic decisions to be made to make the world a better place to live in?
I sure hope so. Particularly, we're looking at some decisions that are going to be made around global taxation reform. I think we're going to be looking at more funding being put forward for the Just Energy Transition Partnership, looking at new forms of financing, including sustainable models and new partnerships that are being elevated. And I definitely we're looking forward to, or at least I'm personally looking forward to, some work being done mm-hmm. around the space of anti-corruption and beneficial ownership transparency, which I know doesn't sound that impactful, but given that corruption mm-hmm. accounts for $3 trillion, it could have massive impact, and then that
okay.
funding could be used for something else.
Daniel, authoritarianism, which is on the rise, climate change, poverty, landing to those who are distressed economically, seem to be now on the back burner, given the fact that there is this massive focus on the war in Ukraine and the rivalry between the United States of America and China. Are we likely to see those issues just relegated to the back burner for years and years to come?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think this is going to stay at this level of tension forever. So you're going to see some sorts of progress in Ukraine one way or the other on the diplomatic or military front. And that is going to find some room again for the economic issues, the environmental issues and other issues to take their place. The reality is Ukraine actually is very impactful on the global economy, on food to many other countries, creating a food crisis in terms of both the quantities as well as the pricings for many of these countries and your listeners. So the reality is Ukraine does need to get addressed. And actually, if Ukraine gets addressed, you're going to see improvement in the economic issues and allow us to actually turn back mm-hmm. to environmental issues, which are affecting so many countries.
I really appreciate your insight. Looking forward to talking to you in the near future about this story and many other topics. Denise Rudish, Daniel Speckhard, Sergei Makarov, thank you very much. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com, for further discussion. Go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Ahlbala, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.